Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
Hey there, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tabira, glad to have you along. As always, today in one of our longer form conversations, we're going to check in with State Treasurer Dale Falwell. He's been embroiled in a back and forth with the legislature, also investing one of the largest pension funds in the world. We chat with him about that. And also, I began our Tuesday afternoon conversation, which we recorded in his office, with a question about a recent injury he suffered while racing his motorcycle.
Well, as you know, about 2.5 weeks ago, I broke my arm between my elbow and my shoulder, and it was doing something that I've enjoyed doing for the last 45 years, which is racing motorcycles in the dirt. And I'd gotten the white flag, and so about 30 minutes left in my career, and went over a jump and came down hard. So I'm in many ways, I'm lucky, but it also reminds me that being keeper of the public purse is always bigger than any one individual, and I'm very proud of the team and how they've carried on in my physical absence. I've been in every meeting and on every conference call since it occurred, and obviously back in the office.
You've had somewhat of a notable time riding motorbikes, and please jump in if my language or terminology is incorrect here at any point. You've won a couple of state championships. You won a national championship. Mm-hmm. And you purported to have never been injured before online after this happened. Is that true? Have you truly never been injured riding motorbikes for 45 years?
Never had a broken bone racing. Obviously, when you do this type of sport, you get injured all the time. Sprains and bruises and other kinds of things. Right. But and as your listeners know very well, sometimes a sprain or a bruise can hurt worse than a broken bone.
I've wondered about surfers before. Right, like you see a young person on a longboard, and you think, what are they going to do when they can't ride a wave anymore? You're not a super old man, but you're also not that young of a lad either. What are the potential next hobbies as you move away from a pastime of more than half your life?
Well, I've been riding 50 years. It's my 50th year of riding a motorcycle. 45 years of racing, and I'll continue to ride road motorcycles. My wife and I, there's really no other sensation like riding a motorcycle. You know when the season's changing before anyone else does. You realize that food doesn't come from a store, it comes from a farm. And all the great areas of North Carolina, this is a motorcycle mecca, and I'll continue to do that.
As we chat here, we're recording from your office on a Tuesday afternoon, just a few days. Open enrollment begins for roughly 720,000 state employees. Mm-hmm. No significant changes this year for folks in the open enrollment period. Is that right?
Right. Open enrollment's a little later this year than normal, and I take responsibility for that. We have tried to get rid of secret contracts in healthcare as it relates to healthcare, the state health plan. You mentioned a moment ago 720,000 participants. To put that in context for your listeners, that's almost as many people than work for Amazon, J.P. Morgan, and Berkshire Hathaway combined in the United States. It's a very large and complicated plan, not only the largest purchaser of healthcare and pharmaceuticals in North Carolina, but also one of the largest plans in the country. So open enrollment's going to start this Saturday. Some new things. We have some Sunday hours this year. Which I think is better oriented to our consumers. We're not doing the automatic Medicare Advantage enrollment back into the United Healthcare product. Almost 90% of our participants are on that product already. And when I first joined the treasurer's office as the state treasurer, took about 51 clicks to get through open enrollment. And this year we're at 10. So it should be a lot easier for people. Are you married, yes or no? what type of coverage do you want, yes or no? Do you smoke, yes or no? Do you agree to smoking attestation, yes or no? Save it and move forward. So we're continuing to do that. And then as soon as we get through open enrollment, then we're going to start doing what we intended to do last year, which is to push the power to the consumer. You know, tomorrow at Food Line is Senior Citizen Day, and Thursday is Senior Citizen Day at Harris Teeter. You'll learn that one day. And my point of saying that to you is that in every other aspect of your listener's life, they know how to consume things, whether it's tanks of gasoline or buy two, get three free on sale, except in healthcare. And we are going to continue to work toward getting rid of secret contracts, pushing the power out to the consumer. We think that's going to result in lower cost. And whether you listen to President Trump or Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, this issue about rising healthcare costs are going to make the generational difference, not just in the future of North Carolina, but in the future of the country.
A little bit of context. One other way to look at it. You mentioned the size of the state health plan, the number of people who receive care from it. It's about 7% of the people living in North Carolina, a little bit more than 7%. You went to battle earlier this year, and if that's not a fair characterization, please reassess. But from my perspective, you went to battle with state lawmakers, with Blue Cross Blue Shield, a couple of giants, a couple of heavyweights to go to battle with, and you put forth the clear pricing model. You wanted to gain greater transparency. You said it was going to result in hundreds of millions of dollars in savings for North Carolinians. At the end of the day, lawmakers did not buy in. There were not enough hospitals of the 100 or so in the state that bought in. I think there were five, and I believe you used the word courageous to describe those hospitals in committing to your plan. The battle was lost, but is this effectively, excuse the war analogy, but you lost the battle, but the war, does the war march on here?
Yeah, there's no turning back, and I'd like to recharacterize what you just said. Number one, there was no law that stopped us from what we were doing. We were boycotted by what I call an association that uses cartel-like activities. Now, if you're the state treasurer and you're using a term like cartel-like activities, you better know what it means. And for your listeners, oftentimes if they go to the Bible or go to the Webster's Dictionary, it's a good place to start. A cartel is an association that is formed in order to restrict competition and or raise prices. We set out with a clear pricing project, and we have 25,000 providers who have said yes. 25,000 providers who have said, even some who are going to make less money, who say that we don't want to be a part of any more secret contracts. We're willing to tell people what services are going to cost, and we think that's very important. So we're going to be building on that. Number B, it's important for your listeners to know that there's no turning back. No longer are people going to accept having 20% of their income go towards something they don't understand. And this is not about me as treasurer or anyone else in state government. Our focus as keepers of the public purse is on the average state employee, the beginning teacher, the beginning trooper, who this year is having to work 1 week out of four to pay the family premium. 1 week out of four. That is completely unacceptable. And as far as you characterizing it as a battle, from the point that this started over a year ago in this very location, with over 42 stakeholders present, it's very clear that we were on different roads. The road the state health plan is on is to attack a problem. What we found immediately is that the other side is only interested in attacking people, and you've seen lots of evidence of that. But I'm also get comfort in someone who was very important in my life, who's no longer here, a famous English professor at UNC Greensboro. He said that, you know, sometimes it's okay to pick the right enemies. And we don't want to be enemies with anyone. The fact is that we think that we have enough money, we have enough needs, we have enough medical providers, we'll be able to figure this out. And even after offering nearly 100% profit, they continue to boycott, even those that stood to make more money. So that's how we're moving forward.
Just to be clear, the cartel, as you refer to it, that's Blue Cross Blue Shield.
The large hospitals.
Okay.
Blue Cross Blue Shield is only a third-party administrator to us. Okay. They are not our insurer.
Okay. So as you refer to a cartel as being the hospital association,
Cartel-like activities.
Cartel-like activities, mm-hmm. the North Carolina Hospital Association. And what you wanted to do was change reimbursement rates. And your critics and some of the people that pushed back on this plan said that it was going to result in so much lost money that some hospitals were going to have to close. That's their perspective. That was the rhetoric. Those sure. were the stance that they took. As we look ahead to 2020, what different approach are you going to take or try to administer so that, I imagine, again, the battle's going to continue. It's going to be part two or part what, however you want to classify it, mm-hmm. ultimately win this war. What have you learned and what different approach are you going to take?
Well, it's not just me. I mean, as I said, there's...
You're leading. Is it fair to say you're leading the effort?
I'm leading the effort as far as what our loyalty and duty of care is, and that is to the state employees and taxpayers in North Carolina. Every purchaser of health care should be demanding to know what they're supposed to pay. We just happen to be a large governmental entity. And so what we're going to be doing is partnering with the 25,000 providers across North Carolina who've said yes to clear pricing. And we're going to be acknowledging them. And so that our customers, when they know they go there, they have some certainty about what they're going to pay. And that's where we intend to go going forward.
North Carolina Treasurer Dale Falwell here on the WUNC Politics Podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at NC Treasurer. You served four terms in the North Carolina House from Forsyth County. You ran for Lieutenant Governor in 2012. You were defeated in a primary, but that led to your next position in state government as the head of the Employment Securities Commission here in North Carolina. You're in your third year in the job as treasurer. You're overseeing one of the largest pools of public money in the world, in the country as well. But I'm wondering, with a recession on the horizon, now whether that's near horizon, far horizon, how have you changed the way in which you've invested some of this giant fund to try to prepare for that moment, if you have it all?
Well, the pension plan of North Carolina is one of the five best funded in the United States, and it is that way because it's always been conservatively managed, and that hasn't changed. It's important to note that when the stock market goes roaring up, our pension plan doesn't perform as well as some others that are swinging for the fences, so to speak. But when the market goes down, it doesn't do as badly. For example, most pension plans lost 3% of their value last year, and ours only lost 1%. The problem with that, Jeff, is that this pension plan is supposed to earn 7% on average in order for it to produce the benefits that these teachers, troopers, and other state employees are depending on. It has not achieved that in 21 years on average, and it's not going to achieve it in the next 21 years. And my point of telling you that is that when you're dealing with a pension plan that's even one of the best funded in the United States at these historical and some places in the world negative interest rates, when you have a plan that's spending over $6 billion a year, that's more than the state debt in gross benefits, when you have life expectancies that are increasing such that if you're a female in this plan, for example, and you come to work for the state right out of college, you could literally be retired for longer than you worked. So interest rates an all-time low. Wall Street fees had gone from $50 to $700 million per year. People, the blessed event of life expectancies and no minimum retirement age. So your listeners should be hopefully thinking to themselves, if this is one of the five best in the country, what does that say about some of these other plans? And the answer is it doesn't say good things. You know, the South Carolina pension plan is only 55% funded. The Alabama is 64% funded. One of the Kentucky retirement systems is 33% funded. So
and we're at about 80?
We're about 88% funded. But as I said, we have tremendous headwinds. But going back to a more broader question is that I'm standing on, you mentioned all the experience I had in public service, and I'm standing on the shoulders of a lot of people who, but for them, I'm the least likely person in North Carolina to ever be the state treasurer based on where I started in life. But there are several things that they have taught me since the age of 10, but one of them is that if you want to get ahead in life, when they ask for volunteers for the toughest jobs, you raise yours hand. And that's what I've done. And that's, I always worked on the hard stuff in the General Assembly that saved lives, saved money, or saved minds. And I definitely worked on the hard thing of reforming the North Carolina unemployment system. When I inherited that agency, we had $2.7 billion in debt owed to the federal government. We were actually raising payroll taxes on people. We were asking to put people on their payroll. And now, as the keeper of the public purse, we have nearly $50 billion, that's B, billion dollars, worth of unfunded health care and pension liabilities. And to put that in context for your listeners, that is twice as much as the budget that's being debated right now. And that is 10 times as large as the state debt.
You've talked about this unfunded liability a lot of different turns. What is the what are the next steps to bring that number, that $50 billion number? And I mean, you can take it a step further if you want. You don't say that to be alarmist. And that's a long-term picture. It's not as though there's going to be a $50 billion hole tomorrow that has to be paid. No. But it's a long-term projection. And what, from your perspective, what are the next steps? What do you plan to do?
Well, the next steps is what I've always done, you know, as a motorcycle mechanic or other things I've been involved in, is it listen, act, and fix. And the fixing part is to bring awareness to the issue. And contrary a little bit to what you just said, this is in the oven. Meaning the contribution rates that UNC Radio, UNC Healthcare, the Treasurer's Office, the Department of Transportation, the employer contribution rates, the bill that we send them every year for this pension plan, those numbers are already baked in for the next 5 and 10 years. And the curve is straight up and down. So, and not only that, but now we're talking about local governments. And unlike the state government, the local governments in many instances have nowhere else to go in order to pay this increased pension cost except to property taxpayers. Property taxpayers in some of these areas that are depopulating. So actually increasing property taxes on areas that are losing their population. And so this is a very serious matter. So this is not something that I wanted to be focused on while I'm the state treasurer, but it's something that is necessary that I become focused on, because as I said earlier, this is not emotional or political, which so many stories are these days. This is mathematical. The fact is that if we don't solve these problems, and you can ask Bill Gates, you can ask Warren Buffett, you can ask anybody about this, if we don't solve these problems, it's going to make a generational difference in the future of our state, and it's going to impact things that people do wake up and care about in the morning, which is how are we educating our kids, how are we protecting ourselves from criminals, how are we paving our roads and all the ports, the parks, and all the core functions of our state government.
I want to ask you about one personnel issue with Charlotte-Mecklenburg police chief. This is the overview here. He plans to his plan is to retire at the end of the year. And this is Kerr Putney, who's the CMPD chief, plans to retire at the end of the year and then was going to come back on to the staff to be involved with law enforcement through the Republican National Convention in 2020. And you had said that this was in violation of state law, and this was not something that could proceed. And I'm just wondering if there is an update of any sort here, if you've talked to him and where things stand.
No, we are pro-check delivering. That's what we do. We deliver checks for people who retire from the state government. We're very, only as an agency, but myself, are pro-law enforcement. But there are laws that have been federal laws, IRS laws, regarding return to work policies. So I won't comment specifically about the gentleman you asked me about, but to say that these laws apply to every employee of local government, no matter what their position is, and every employee of state government. They're called return to work laws. And the law is very specific. You cannot have an express or written intent when you retire or an agreement in order to come back to work. And so we treat this like we would any other situation. And And that's what we're trying to do. We don't pick and choose which laws to apply or who to apply them to. And that's how you are able to maintain the tax-exempt status of this plan. What makes this plan work is that all the state employees themselves contribute money to this plan every 30 days. And that contribution by the employees are tax deductible. We can't do anything that would put us in a position of jeopardizing their tax-exempt status of one of the largest pools of public money in the world. And therefore, we can't be careless about anything that we do regarding that matter.
Dale Falwell served four terms in the North Carolina House from Forsyth County, was the pro tem of the House back in the biennium in the 2011-2012 session. He now today is the Republican State Treasurer of North Carolina, and he was your guest again here on the WNC Politics Podcast. Thank you for the conversation, Treasurer.
Well, thank you. And as one of our members of our board reminded me a few years ago, he said, you know, Treasurer, there's no Democrat and Republican fires. And there's no Democrat and Republican crimes. And there's no Democrat and Republican money at the Treasurer's office. It's all green. And as keepers of the public purse, we have always focused on the pennies and the paper clips. And we focus on figuring out what's right, getting it right, and keeping it right for the participants of these plans who we have a loyalty and duty to, and taxpayers like them.
As always, thanks for listening. Remember, you can subscribe to the WNC Politics Podcast, Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. Stay up to date with whatever is happening at your state legislature and within state government at our website throughout the week at WNC.org. For Treasurer Dale Falwell, I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again soon.